the other shied back into the shadows. "Are you Ganteris?" Luke asked softly.
"No, my name is Wharton."
He fumbled for words. Then they came out in a rush. "Everyone is gone. There's been a rock slide in one of the crevasses. It buried two of our youngest, who went out to spear bugdillos. Ganteris and the others are there, trying to dig them out." Luke felt a stab of urgency and grasped Wharton's arm.
"Take me there. Maybe I can help."
Wharton allowed himself to be nudged into motion, and he took Luke along a winding path through jagged rocks. The second man remained behind among the collapsing shelters. Luke and Wharton descended through switchbacks down the steep wall of a crack in the ground, a split wrenched apart by tidal forces. Down here, the air seemed thicker, smellier, more claustrophobic. Wharton knew exactly where to find the other survivors, in the maze of side channels and partial landslides. Luke saw them shoulder to shoulder in an elbow of the crevasse, scrambling over newly fallen rock, working to haul boulders aside. Every one of the 30 people there wore the same implacable expression, as if their optimism had burned away, but they could not allow themselves to give up their duties. Two of the women bent over the rubble, calling into the cracks. One man worked with twice the effort of the others. His long black hair hung in a braid on the left side of his face. His eyebrows and eyelashes had been plucked away, leaving his broad face smooth and angular and flushed with his exertion. He shoved rocks aside, which the other people hauled away. They had already managed to clear some of the debris, but they had not yet uncovered the two victims. The dark-haired man paused to glance at Luke, failed to recognize him or understand his presence, then returned to his efforts. By the way Wharton and the others looked to him, Luke guessed the man must be Ganteris himself. Before Wharton had taken him to the base of the rockfall, Luke stopped and, with a quick glance, took in the positioning of the boulders. He let his arms fall to his sides, rolled his eyes back in concentration, and reached out through the force, using the strength he found there to feel the boulders, to move them, and to keep other rocks from doing further damage. When Yoda had trained him to lift large stones, it had been merely a game, a training exercise. Now two lives depended on it. He paid no attention to the astonished sounds as the colonists stepped back, ducking out of the way as Luke mentally hurled boulder after boulder from the top of the rock pile, tossing them into other parts of the crevasse. He could feel life down in the shadowy depths somewhere. When the rocks began to show splashes of blood, and he exposed a pale arm, part of a shoulder hunched in the secret shadows of the avalanche, several people rushed forward. Luke made an extra effort to keep the unstable pile of rocks steady enough for the rescue operations. He continued to remove fallen boulders. "She's alive!" someone shouted, and several helpers rushed into the debris, brushing away stones and hauling free a young girl. Her face and legs were battered and bloody. One arm was obviously broken. She began weeping with pain and relief as the rescuers pulled her out. Luke knew she would be all right. Near the girl, however, the young boy had not been so lucky. The avalanche had crushed him instantly. The boy had been dead long before Luke arrived. Luke continued to work grimly until they had excavated the body. Amid sobs of grief, he released himself from his semi-trance and opened his eyes. Ganteris stood directly in front of him. Barely suppressed anger seethed beneath his controlled expression.
"Why are you here?" Ganteris asked. "Who are you?"
Wharton stepped up beside Luke.
"I saw him walk out of the geyser field. All the geysers went off at once, and he just strode out of the steam."
Wharton blinked in awe as he looked at Luke.
"He says he has come for you, Ganteris."
"Yes, I know,"
Ganteris muttered to himself. Luke met the other man's eyes.
"I am Luke Skywalker, a Jedi Knight. The Empire has fallen, and a new republic has taken its place."
He drew a deep breath.
"If you are Ganteris, and if you have the ability, I have come to teach you how to use the Force."
Several of the others walked up, bearing the broken ragdoll body of the dead boy. The man carrying the boy let his stony expression flicker for just an instant. The look on Ganteris's face seemed a frightening mixture of horror and eagerness.
"I have dreamed of you, a dark man who offers me incredible secrets, then destroys me. I am lost if I go with you."
Ganteris straightened.
"You are a demon."
Surprised, especially after his efforts to save the two children, Luke tried to placate him.
"No, that isn't it."
Other colonists gathered around the confrontation, finding a focus for their anger and suspicion. They looked at Luke, at this stranger who had arrived in time to usher in the death of one of their dwindling number. Luke glanced at the people around him and decided to gamble. He stared directly into Gandarus's eyes. "What can I do to prove my intentions to you? I am your guest or your prisoner. What I want is your cooperation. Please listen to what I have to say." Gandarus reached out to take the body of the boy in his own arms. The man who had been carrying him looked forlorn and lost as he stared at the bloodstains on his sleeves. Gandarus nodded back to Luke. "Take the dark man." Several people reached forward to grasp Luke's arms. He did not struggle. Bearing the dead boy, Gandarus led a slow procession out of the chasm. He turned once, briefly, to glare at Luke. "We will learn why you are here." 6. Leia stood in the private communications chamber, heaving a sigh as she glanced again at the chronometer. The Caridan ambassador was late. He was probably doing it just to spite her. Out of deference to the ambassador, she had reset her clock to Caridan local time. Though Ambassador Fergan had suggested the transmission time himself, it seemed he couldn't be bothered to abide by it. Two-way mirrors displayed empty corridors outside the communications chamber. At this late hour, most sensible people were deeply asleep in their own quarters, but no one had ever promised Leia Organa Solo that diplomatic duties kept regular hours. When such obligations crept into her schedule, Han usually grumbled at being awakened in the depths of the night, complaining that even pirates and smugglers kept their activities to more civilized time slots. But this evening, Leia's alarm had awakened her to empty and silent rooms. Han still had not called. A cleaning droid puttered along the corridor, polishing the walls and scouring the two-way mirrors. Leia watched its lamprey-like scrubbers do their work. With a burst of static from poorly tuned holonet transmitters, the image of Ambassador Fergan of Caridda formed in the center of the receiving dais. Maybe the poor transmission quality was deliberate, yet another rude reaction. The chronometer told Leia that the ambassador had made his transmission a full 6 minutes past the time he himself had insisted on. Fergan made no attempt to apologize for his tardiness, and Leia studiously avoided calling attention to it. Fergan was a barrel-chested humanoid with spindly arms and legs. The eyebrows on his squarish face flared upward like bird's wings. Despite the Emperor's known prejudice against non-human species, apparently the Caridans had been acceptable enough to secure the Emperor's business, since Palpatine had built his most important Imperial military training center on Caridda.
"Princess Leia," Fergan said, "you needed to discuss certain planning details with me. Please be brief."
He crossed his arms over his broad chest in clearly hostile body language. Leia tried not to let her exasperation show.
"As a matter of protocol, I would prefer if you could address me as minister, rather than princess. The planet on which I was a princess no longer exists."
Leia worked hard to keep the scowl off her face. Fergan waved her comment aside as if it were of no consequence.
"Very well then, minister. What did you wish to discuss?"
Leia took a deep breath, quelling the hot temper rising behind her cool expression.
"I wanted to inform you that Mon Mothma and the other cabinet members of the New Republic will be hosting a formal reception in your honor when you reach Coruscant."
Fergan bristled.
"A frivolous reception? Am I supposed to give a warm and glowing speech? Make no mistake, I am coming to Coruscant on a pilgrimage to visit the home of the late Emperor Palpatine, not to be pampered by an upstart, illegitimate band of terrorists. Our loyalty remains with the Empire."
"Ambassador Fergan, there is no centralized empire." It took all her effort not to rise to the bait. Her dark eyes burned with obsidian fires, but she smiled instead at the ambassador.
"Nevertheless, we will extend to you every courtesy in the confidence that your planet will find a way to adapt to political reality in the galaxy."
The Caridan's holographic image shimmered. "Political realities change," he said. "It remains to be seen just how long your rebellion will last." Fergan's image fizzled into static as he cut the transmission. Leia sighed and rubbed her temples, trying to massage away the headache lurking behind her eyes. She left the communications chamber discouraged.
What a way to end the day.
Deep underground in the Imperial Information Center, all hours looked the same, but C-3PO's internal chronometer told him it was the middle of Coruscant's night. A pair of repair droids worked at dismantling one of the great air exchange systems that had burned out. The repair droids dropped tools and discarded pieces of metal shielding with reckless abandon, making the echoing chamber sound like a war zone. 3PO much preferred the humming loneliness of the previous day. Buried in their own universe of data networks, the hunched slicer droids worked undisturbed. R2-D2 slavishly continued his days-long search without pause. With a loud clatter, the repair droids dropped an entire three-bladed fan assembly. "I'm going to give those droids a piece of my mind," 3PO said. Before 3PO could march off, R2 jacked out of the data port and began chittering and whistling. In his excitement, the little astromech droid rocked back and forth, bleeping. "Oh," 3PO said, "you'd better let me check that, R2. It's probably another one of your false alarms." When data scrolled up on the screen, 3PO could see nothing that would have captured R2's interest, until the other droid recompiled the information to emphasize his point. A name popped up beside every entry. Kemo.
"Oh my, it does appear suspicious when you look at it that way. This Kemo person seems a likely candidate indeed."
3PO straightened, suddenly at a loss.
"But Master Luke isn't here, and he gave us no further instructions. Whom can we tell?"
R2 bleeped, then whistled a question. 3PO turned to him with offended dignity.
"I will not wake Mistress Leia in the middle of the night. I am a protocol droid, and there is a proper way to go about these things."
He nodded in affirmation of his decision.
"We will inform her first thing in the morning."
The levitating breakfast tray brought itself to Leia's table on the park balcony high in the Imperial Towers. The sun gleamed on the city that stretched across the entire landmass of Coruscant. High in the air, flying creatures rode the morning thermals. Leia scowled down at the food the breakfast tray presented to her. None of it looked appetizing, but she knew she had to eat. She selected a small plate of assorted pastries and sent the breakfast tray on its way. Before it departed, the tray told her to have a pleasant day. She sighed and picked at her breakfast. She felt exhausted mentally as well as physically. She hated to feel so dependent, even on her own husband, but she never slept well while he was away. Han should have arrived on Kessel 3 days ago, and he was due back in 2 days. She didn't want to cling, but it disappointed her that he had not yet transmitted so much as a greeting. With diplomatic duties that kept her busy at all hours, they saw too little of each other even when they were both on the same planet. Well, the twins would be coming home in another 6 days. Han and Chewbacca would be back by then, and their entire lifestyle would change. A pair of 2-year-olds running around the place would force Han and Leia to look differently at many of the things they took for granted. But why hadn't Han gotten in touch? It shouldn't have been so difficult to send a holonet communique from the Falcon's cockpit. She wasn't quite ready yet to admit she was worried about him. With a greeting signal from the archway of the park balcony, an older model protocol droid marched into view.
"Excuse me, Minister Organa Solo. Someone wishes to see you. Are you accepting visitors?"
Leia set down her breakfast pastry.
"Why not?" It was probably some lobbyist wanting to complain to her in private, or a panicked minor functionary who needed her to make a decision on some uninteresting detail,
or one of the other senators trying to hand off some of his own duties. Instead, with a flourish of his vermilion cape, Lando Calrissian walked through the arch.
"Good morning, Madam Minister. I hope I'm not disturbing your breakfast."
He flashed a broad, disarming smile. Seeing him, Leia felt her mood immediately lighten. She stood up and met him near the archway. He gallantly kissed her hand, but she was not satisfied until she had given him a friendly hug.
"Lando, you're the last person I expected this morning."
He followed her back to the table overlooking the skyline of Imperial City and pulled up a chair, sweeping his cape over its back. Without asking, Lando took one of her untouched pastries and began to munch on it.
"So, what brings you to Coruscant?" she asked.
She realized how eager she was just to have a normal conversation without diplomatic entanglements and hidden agendas. Lando brushed crumbs from his mustache.
"I just came to see how you all are doing in the big city. Where's Han?"
She grumbled.
"That seems to be a sore subject this morning. He and Chewie went off to Kessel,
but I think they just used it as an excuse to go joyriding and remembering their glory years. Kessel can be a pretty rough place. Leia avoided his eyes. Han hasn't bothered to call in 6 days. That's not like him, Lando said. Oh, yes, it is, and you know it. I suppose we'll have words when he comes back day after tomorrow. Then she forced an artificial air of brightness. But let's not talk about that right now. How can you find time to trot around visiting people? A respectable man like yourself has so many responsibilities. Lando averted her gaze this time and began fidgeting. He stared at the expanses of gleaming new buildings visible through the metropolis. For the first time, Leia noticed a slight scruffiness to his appearance. His clothes seemed a bit ragged around the edges, the colors faded as if from too much wear. He spread his hands, then took another breakfast pastry. To tell you the truth, I'm in between engagements right now. He gave her a lopsided grin, but she frowned back at him. What happened to your big mining operation on Niklan? Didn't the New Republic replace most of your destroyed machinery? Well, it was still a lot of work and not paying off. Bad publicity after the Sluice Van attack, you know. And Niklan is a hellish place. You were there. I just needed a change. Leia crossed her arms and looked at him skeptically. All right, Lando, the appropriate excuses are logged and recorded. Now, what really happened to Niklan? He squirmed. Well, I lost it in a sabacc game. She couldn't keep herself from laughing. So you're out of work? His expression of wounded pride was obviously faked. Leia considered for a moment. We could always reactivate your commission as a general in the New Republic. You and Wedge were a great team on Calamari. His eyes widened. Are you offering me a job? I can't imagine what you would want me to do. Formal receptions, state dinners, plenty of wealthy backers wandering around, Leia said. The possibilities are endless. Just then the old protocol droid shuffled through the arch again, but before he could announce his business, C-3PO and R2-D2 bustled around him, making a direct path to Leia. Princess Leia, 3PO could not contain his excitement. We've found one. R2, tell the princess. Oh, General Calrissian, what are you doing here? R2 launched into a series of electronic sounds, which 3PO dutifully translated. R2 was checking the records of various winners in different gambling establishments throughout the galaxy.